You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 53 of Take a Bow Podcast. I'm your host, Eli Tokash, and oh my goodness, what I just have to say, it's been an incredible week. We've literally launched 3 episodes in the last 7 days. It's been pretty insane. It's been pretty amazing and fun. For those of you who missed it and may be unsure of what I'm talking about, I released a bonus episode for Take a Bow on Monday where BPN did a whole like little press thing for In the Heights. And so you'll hear from me and you'll hear from 4 other podcasts who also got the pleasure of interviewing some of the stars of the new In the Heights film. And it's a bunch of like mini episodes put into one. Mine was 10 minutes and I did it with Gregory Diaz. So if you didn't check that out yet, go check it out if you're interested. We talk all things In the Heights and careers before that and all kinds of fun things with all of the stars of In the Heights. And you'll hear from other podcasts on the Broadway Podcast Network. But that's not what today is about. Today is about episode 53 with none other than the Natalie Weiss. And I am so excited because this episode has been a long time in the making. And today is the day that you all get to hear it. And I couldn't be more excited. But before we turn it over to the interview portion, let's get into some Broadway news. So like I said, lots of content for Take a Bow. But there's also been a lot of things happening surrounding Broadway. Of course, I feel like I say that every week, but it's true. I mean, we're reopening. Things are starting to get crazy. Things are opening back up, and there's a lot of fun new information coming out. So, with that being said, this fun new information starts from like Thursday. Of course, great timing again on the release date. Take a Bow. Thank you. but no. Hadestown released on Thursday, I think. Like, it was literally, like, as soon as I released, it was, like, out, I feel like, the next day. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was a little bit after. Hadestown pulled the, oh, I don't think so card. And they were just like, no, we're going to be the first Broadway show to reopen. And we're reopening on September 2nd. You think Broadway's reopening on September 14th? Think again. And that's right, guys. Like, I don't know. Like, if you kind of miss that little punchline there, Hadestown's going to be the first Broadway show to reopen, and Broadway is going to be reopening even sooner than we all thought on September 2nd with Hadestown starting up Broadway. I'm so excited. Hadestown is one of my favorite shows. And another show also announced that they will be opening up on October 13th, and that is The Girl from the North Country. So that is going to be reopening with most of the original cast, but some of it will be different. And there was also another show that announced its opening like ever. One of the first new shows post-pandemic. And that's Thoughts of a Colored Man. And one of our past Take a Bow guests, who literally was doing everything at the time, was stage managing, doing scholarships, all of the things. You probably may know who I'm talking about from just saying that. But now he's going to be co-producing this show. It's his first time producing. He's so excited. Cody Renard Richard is going to be co-producing this brand new show. And this is the first play in Broadway history to be written, directed, lead produced, and led by a cast of Black men. How incredible is that? It needs to happen. This needs to be normalized. This shouldn't even be a news like headline that you see. Like, it's such a big deal that that's the case. Like, this should be a thing already. You know, like, I can't believe it's taken until 2021 to be like, oh, this is the first play in Broadway history to be written, directed, lead produced, and led by a cast of Black men. Like, this is going to be amazing. It's going to be. It has an amazing cast. The tickets go on sale June 18th, and they're going to open up on Broadway. They're going to open previews, that is, on Broadway on October 1st. So it's so exciting just to see all of these new shows. That's one of the first new shows post-pandemic that announced that it's going to be reopening when Broadway returns. So it's happening. Another show that is one of the first shows that is going to be opening up post-pandemic is actually coming from off-Broadway. That's right, we're getting some off-Broadway news, and that's great to hear, but we still don't have all of it yet. There's still a lot of question marks surrounding off-Broadway. But I have to say, I think this one came sort of out of left field, especially for me. Winnie the Pooh. Winnie the Pooh will be opening off-Broadway sometime this fall. I didn't even know they were making a musical out of that. So Winnie the Pooh's heading off-Broadway. We have some shows opening up. It's going to be insane. It doesn't have a release date yet. It doesn't have a cast yet. But once we get that information, I'll definitely keep you all updated. It's just exciting times. And speaking of even more exciting times, the Tony Awards. Okay, I have some beef with the Tony Awards, though, and I'm going to get into it right now. So the ceremony is going to be airing live on Paramount Plus and CBS on September 26th and will be followed by a live concert event to celebrate Broadway's reopening. But yes, you heard that right. September 26th, after Broadway's going to be reopened for 3 weeks, Broadway is still going to be having a virtual Tony Awards. I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it. Broadway's already going to be reopening. I feel like people should just, they should have it live. Like, not like, I mean, they are going to have it live, but you know what I mean. Like, they should have a Tony Awards. Maybe of just the nominees at the least. Maybe not an audience, but people shouldn't be having to Zoom in from home to accept their Tony Award. You know, I don't know. Maybe that'll change. Maybe more will come out about that, and they're kind of just figuring it all out still. But we have a date, and it's going to be on September 26th, and it's going to be very, very exciting. It's the 74th annual Tony Award, and guess what? It's going to be a four-hour celebration. Isn't that insane? It's going to have a four-hour celebration. It's going to be 2 hours of awards, and then it's going to be 2 hours of a concert to celebrate Broadway reopening. So very exciting things happening, and we have to wait until September for all of it. But that's okay, because we're getting hope and we're getting good news, and why not share that good news to make people's days? Really, like, come on. But it's going to be very interesting to see what to do and how this all goes about and working. They really haven't specified how it's going to work as far as like an audience and all of that, but I don't know. It seems like it's going to be virtual right now. So with that being said, we have one more thing to do before we go over to the interview, and we're going to talk Drama Dictionary. So this week's Drama Dictionary word of the week is 11 o'clock number. And that's more of a phrase of the week, but like, it's fine. You understand. So 11 o'clock number is like the best song in the show. You know, like, it's like the showstopper. So like in Sideshow, it's like, I Will Never Leave You is the 11 o'clock number. And in Finding Neverland, it's kind of hard to like pick out the 11 o'clock number, because usually it's like halfway through Act Two. But like low key, the 11 o'clock number in Finding Neverland is stronger. But like, I don't know. I guess the 11 o'clock number in Finding Neverland would be like Play or We're All Made of Stars. To give examples, I don't know if that like helped. In Wicked, it's like Defying Gravity. You get what I'm saying. Like in Dear Evan Hansen, it's Words Failed. Like, you know what I mean? It's like the showstopper that like everyone's like, oh my god, over. Literally could get a standing ovation every night. That's their favorite song in the show. That's their favorite part. Whatever it may be. Literally, in The Color Purple, it's I'm Here. Literally, Cynthia Erivo would get standing ovations mid-performance. Like, that's what 11 o'clock number is. It's that number that is just outstanding from the rest. It's a showstopper. It's the one that everybody leaves the theater singing. It's, like, the best part of the show. And if you didn't know, now you know. And our guest is no stranger from singing those 11 o'clock numbers. So Natalie Weiss, if you don't know her yet, you gotta look her up. Her voice is absolutely insane. She's literally known for her voice, for her singing abilities. She was a American Idol finalist. She has recorded songs for The Greatest Showman. She's recorded songs for Dear Evan Hansen that you hear in those productions. She was in Emoji Land. And now she's created this brand new crash course of singing. And that's Breaking Down the Riffs with Natalie Weiss. And we're going to get into all of it in a second. But just a reminder, it is out today. So go check it out. Today it's released. It was great timing. It's released today, May 27th, on a Thursday. Go check out NatalieWeissVoice.com to learn more about the crash course that she's created, sign up, whatever it may be, but she's also going to talk about it right now. So without further ado, Natalie Weiss, curtain up. On this week's episode, we have a vocal goddess in the house. So she's literally known for like her effortless singing ability. I mean, from her belt, her riffs, her effortless mix, the flips, everything in between. She's also a Broadway star, for those of you who didn't know, and she's an American Idol semifinalist, and she's one of the top vocal teachers in the industry. So everyone, welcome to Take a Bow, Natalie Weiss.
Oh my God, that is so kind. What?
Oh my God, I'm so excited for you to be here. Oh my God, of course. At some point in this interview, if it's okay with you, because Carolee Carmello has played my grandmother and she's been on this podcast and everything like that, I saw on your resume that you could do like a vocal impression of her. So at some point, I would love to hear a little snippet of that.
Oh my goodness. I mean, look, she's an icon. So like, it's not like in... It's like in the best spirit because she's an icon.
Right. Of course. Okay? I mean, anyone who ever gets impersonated is an icon.
Yes.
Okay. So let's start out with who is Natalie and what kind of got you interested in musical theater?
Okay. I basically started out with classical piano lessons very early on. Mm. That's kind of like my intro to music. And then my parents took me to pop concerts really early. So like Madonna at age 5, and very inappropriate, and Billy Joel, yes, and Janet Jackson. And they took me to Les Mis when I was 7. And I was like in the balcony, yes, like, what's going on? Where's On My Own? I had no idea about the plot. I just wanted to hear On My Own.
Oh my God.
And then like Phantom, you know, but none of my family is like, they're musical, but they're not in musical theater. So the life that I lead is so weird. They're like, this life you lead is so weird. Because they're like in the medical field. So anyway.
Right.
So I went to performing arts high school half a day. I started, you know, my coaching career for free, I guess, in college, in high school, because my friends would be like, play this song for me. Like, let's sit around and harmonize. And then they would like sing a performance and come back and be like, was that pitchy? So it sort of started there. And I had this like, I don't know, interest in teaching. So I did apply for music ed and musical theater. I chose musical theater. I went to Penn State for musical theater. I thought theater people were just my people.
We love that.
Yes. So in college, I was like, you know, coaching my friends and singing in a practice room for fun. I would sort of like organize group songs and like assign parts. And like, I sort of like thrived in that space. So that was like always the side thing. My senior year of college, I was singing a Dreamgirl song at the head of the program's house. And I was like doing it like an opera joke. And one of the freshmen filmed it and he was like, yeah, girl. And he put it on this thing called YouTube.com. And that was 15 years ago. So you were 2 years old.
Stop it.
Wait, when were you born?
I was three.
When were you
born? 2003.
Okay, 2006 is when YouTube, right. So the musical theater YouTube world was just happening. So this person put it on YouTube and called it, and I am telling you, White Girl Can Blow. And then the video got a lot of hits. I mean, viral in the terms of like, you know, TikTok is billions. This was like a couple thousand, you know, at the time. Uh-huh. So then it just sort of built. And then like my showcase video went viral in a musical theater sense. So viral back then. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of built from there. And then was doing concerts and like auditioning, doing some shows, did a tour, getting known in like the concert recording world. So at the time, like all the new musical theater writers were happening at the same time. And I had just graduated. So I was like this fresh face. And then fast forward to 2012, I was on tour with Les Mis for like 3.5 years, 2.5 years. And I was a swing. So yes. I was, you know, I had a lot of offstage time. I was understudying roles like Crazy Whore and Bloody Whore. And I wasn't necessarily creatively fulfilled, but making the most money of my career. So I was like, I guess I'm going to stay here. So, yeah. You know, I found the time to like teach across the country and, you know, work on little passion side projects. So Beyonce's Halo had come out probably a few years prior. And one of my friends was listening to Halo and she was like, how many notes are in the riff on the word night? And I was like, let me listen. So I listened to the notes and I was like, okay, it's like seven notes. If you tilt your head on the fifth note, you can land it better. And she's like, cool, that works. So I like remembered that. And then I was about to do one video with like a bunch of riffs, like, hi everyone, it's Natalie here with some riffs. Like I was just going to do it on photo booth. Then I was like, you know what, let me do one for now. And then, okay, you count in order. So like, I'm not going to count backwards. It's you hit seven notes and then like you tilt your head. And then I was like, let me like cast my friend as like a very good singer, but a medium riffer. So it's not like so advanced and like not so tone deaf, you know? So I basically was trying to create this like pop singing for dummies mentality. My friend had a good camera and was a good editor. And then it just turned into this 35 episode thing that I just was doing lingo where people could just walk on the street and be like half step and tilt and a da-da-da-da, you know what I mean? Like recite the lingo fast. That was the goal. And then it just like kind of took off. And then the rest is history.
Oh my God. First of all,
it was never like calculated. It's very weird.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know where to start because there are so many branches of questions that I could branch off to. I guess we'll start with Les Mis. So you said that was like one of your first show that you saw, and then you were now, that was like your first professional show after going to college for musical theater. So first of all, what was that like to see like your first show?
Oh, like full circle for, yeah.
Right.
Well, so I had done a few shows before Les Mis. It was my longest run of like a show. I did Wicked for a very, very short time.
Oh.
Everyday Rapture for limited run on Broadway, which was awesome. Which was like 11 years ago now. Oh my God. I did Les Mis for I remember getting cast as a swing and I was like, a swing? I didn't audition for a swing. I'm not capable of this. I thought I was going in for the Fontaine cover. And so I was like, oh, I'll be on tour 6 months. And then like when you're on tour, I mean, you know, right? You did Finding Neverland tour here or in New York?
No, I did it in New York, but I did the Mary Poppins tour. So I do
you
know
did it in New York.
Yeah.
Okay. Mary Poppins tour. So you see, like, I remember thinking like you sign up for housing so far in advance that it's like, I guess I could ride this out. Like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was like, I guess I'm staying on this whole tour. And then the show was doing so well. So yeah, doing the show that I first saw, I think everyone's first show was Les Mis growing up. But yeah, it was kind of like a full circle moment, but I don't know, being on tour, I just loved moving always. And like, I always was like, how do you just go on the same set? And like, you always have like you have like signs everywhere. You know where everything is and you get used to it. And then you have amazing food on tour and like you could sightsee for free, you know?
Yes.
I liked being able to not be static.
It always keeps you on your toes.
Yes. And you know, socially it's important too. I loved my cast. I had really good friends. I think socially on tour, if you're uncomfortable, it's not ideal. So in New York, if you're like, oh my God, I go to a job, you go to a job and then you go home. On tour, it's like your tour family, you know?
Exactly.
So
yeah.
Comfortable. Yeah.
Absolutely. And wait, so was Wicked your first professional show that you did? What was your first professional show?
No, I got my equity card at Pittsburgh CLO the summer before senior year. I did Beauty and the Beast, Grease, and 42nd Street. And then the next summer, I did another season.
Yes.
There.
So that's actually...
So that was like my first.
That's what we bonded over. Okay. So, oh my God. So many things to talk about it. That's what we bonded over when we first met each other at the Greatest Showman readings, because that's where I got my start, because that's where I'm from.
Oh my God, I don't remember.
Oh my God,
what?
Yes. So, yeah. So I was like, you sang, we had like our first little like whole like, I guess, company read through. And you were...
Yes, 2000...
Oh God.
Four,
I don't know. I still had a...
It might have been...
I don't know. I don't think it was 2014 because I like moved here then. I think it was like 2015 or 2016, but like in that vicinity, in that area. So yeah. So I like heard your voice and I was like, oh my God, I have to like go over and talk to her. It was you. It was Lauren and it was Ben Thompson. And I was like, oh my God, hi, I'm Eli. It's so nice to meet you. I'm like this new kid, right, in New York. And you were like, oh my God.
No, you were like, hi, right. Eli. And I was like, oh.
Yes. And you were like, oh my God, wait, where are you from? And I was like, I'm from Pittsburgh. And she was like,
oh, you know that I think I have. Sorry, I think I have your voice memo of a million dreams.
Stop
on my
it.
From 6 years ago. Anyway.
I would continue. Anything to hear that again. That is. That I love that song so much, and the show is okay. Anything, anyways, that was such a that was
okay,
a great
so
time,
Pittsburgh.
And it was, yeah, Pittsburgh, and that's what we like bonded over. And then like each time we had like those little readings that we did, I was like, oh my God, that's my friend from Pittsburgh. Like she knows she was doing the CLO because that's where I did my first show as well. So that's so
that's
funny.
Where I got my start.
It's so funny how many people like start out there and you don't even realize.
Oh yes.
Oh my God. Go Pittsburgh, go CLO, go everything. So then yes. Of course, so like, did you always know that you like had this voice? So you said you were in high school and you like knew that you were like so good and you had like this great ear.
I knew I was so
yeah,
good.
And you wanted to teach and everything.
Did I always know I was so good? No. I think honestly, I'm just kidding. I think like I did the talent show in like fourth grade as a piano player. So like my skill was piano, piano. So I sang at like 8 and 9. Like there's a video of me singing on my own, like poorly. I think I'm good, but it's like vibrato was all over the place. Like I was not a child star. It was like shaky vibrato trying to riff. Like literally it was like every day. Like imagine if it was like, I love him, but. So it'd be like, every day I'm like, imagine I wanted to do that now.
Uh-huh.
It would be like, I'm like, it was like trying to do it then.
Right.
I could see that I like wanted to imitate like Mariah and Whitney. But so basically I would sing around the house and do like really bad riffs, but I didn't know what like clean riffs until I did the talent show in fifth grade. And I sang The Greatest Love of All by Whitney Houston. And I like can't find the video, but I distinctly remember like being Peter Pan as a 10-year-old with like nodules, like fully nodule 10-year-old and like tink, tink, like screaming and like no vibrato, like pitch, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Then I sang, I believe the children, no stage presence, right. Like literally like swaying. And I'd be like, I believe the children are future. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Like, tone riffs and vibrato. Obviously my tone has changed and my voice has deepened and I didn't really finesse myself as an artist, but I remember as an 11-year-old that I could riff at some degree.
God.
And my parents were like, wait, what? You know what I mean? Like they kind of knew I could match pitch. They tell me I was musical early, but like nobody knew I was going to be a singer because nobody in my family is like a singer. So I think that started it. And then, you know, singing and then doing shows and finding that I had this voice that has been improved. I mean, like I learned so much. I mean, I was not the person who just could sing it. I used to calculate like what voice, I didn't know how to really sing until college.
No, but you were a natural, like you knew, like there was definitely something.
I was a natural at 11. Yeah.
Wow.
Not like a 5-year-old who has vibrato, you know, like, you know,
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know when your vibrato came in, but
it still hasn't.
Oh, perfect.
It was there, and then my voice changed.
Navigating voice change.
It's okay. You got to do a whole new relearn of it, and it's cute. So then, like, you had to have known, like, at some point, like, as you continue to find your voice, and you're just like doing all of these amazing riffs and you're starting to like really like learn your voice and learn how to belt and everything like that. Let's talk about the what you did most recently before like the pandemic, Emoji Land.
Yes.
So, okay, first of all,
you didn't
did
get
you
to
everything?
See it, right?
I didn't, but my dear friend Josh Lehman was in it.
Finding Neverland, him playing that part.
Oh my God.
Comedy gold. I got to tell you about a moment of, I'm just reapplying lipstick.
No, I love it.
Just for you.
Thank you.
I got to tell you about a comedic moment that like, I need footage of to see.
I want it.
Continue. Oh, okay. There's this part that apparently off Broadway, at Nymph, because this is off Broadway. At Nymph, he improvised a line that got later on added to the script because he's that much of a comedian.
Of course.
So I do this big song where I'm like, I'm going to build a wall. It's like a firewall. It has to do with a phone. And it's like a, it's a very, it was very apropos to like the wall, the building the wall and the Trump, you know, it was very into that. So I just sing, it's like, I know what I stand for. Big belty song, lots of riffs and belt. Like, yes.
Yes.
And then it finishes and it's like this. And then his line is, wait, hold on. Construction worker. That was so loud. And literally his delivery of it was, that was so loud. And I'm like the line is so genius. So one day he was like, and I had to go like this, right? And just not break.
Right.
One day, I'm not joking, I think it was 90 seconds of him like fully crying and me deadpan, the audience dying. The moment was not, it's supposed to be another line that interrupts. Oh. It was like a minute and a half of construction worker. That was so loud. And then I was like, and like nobody broke. It was so funny though. I was
stop
dying.
It. Only Josh Lehman. Only Josh Lehman.
No, literally. He's
amazing. He's everything that you want he to like is... be on a stage, you know?
And he's so supportive. Oh my God. He's just always so kind to me. He's like, if I ever was like worried about something, he was like, you got this.
Yes. He literally, he so puts everyone so before
confidence
himself.
Building.
It's like he's a gift from God, literally. He's an angel. But did you ever think that you'd be playing an emoji in a show on stage?
No.
Yeah, no, right?
No, it happened. No, I didn't even know about the construction worker emoji. Yeah. So, definitely not. And I found out about it very last minute. I was like on a solo tour, like having a really fulfilling, like doing my solo show in Vegas and Utah and LA. And then I got this email out of nowhere. I was like, would you be interested in this show? And I was like, hello. So I like wasn't even planning on doing a show. I didn't even know the writers. Turns out we had a lot of mutual friends and yeah, it happened.
And of course they wanted you to belt your face off.
Well, yeah, but I was like, you know, I've never played a role in New York. Nobody's ever seen me play a role. And I was like, I got to prove everyone I'm an actor too.
Uh-huh.
You know? So, you know, I had played Molly and Ghost like outside the city, but
sure.
I was like, no, this is my chance to play a role right in New York where everyone can see it.
Right.
So.
Is the construction worker now your favorite emoji?
Ooh, I do. This is really random. I do use the pregnant woman a lot. Yes. When I'm feeling really bloated and full.
Amazing. I love that. That's a great time to use it.
I always use laugh and cry all the time.
Oh, always. Always. Well, I'm going to have to start using the construction worker. I actually never have used it before. I will admit that.
No,
I mean,
like, why would
yeah,
you?
Exactly. Like, it's not like I've had, like, an actual excuse to use it, but, like...
No, yeah.
Yeah, it's... I love it. I love the fact that that was turned into a musical. And I actually, like, went backstage. Josh showed me the set and everything. Because he actually, when I was planning...
Oh, that was incredible.
Oh, my God. That whole, like, backstage, I've never been into that theater before. So just, like, going through mm-hmm. the theater and the lobby and, like, it was just so, like, unique and just not your, like, normal Broadway stage or, like, New York theater, I guess. But it was so neat totally. When Josh showed me it and because I was coming to him because he had a podcast already. So I was like, what's going on with, like, the whole podcast game? And he was like, come back at Emoji Land. I'll take you backstage and talk to you about it. I was like, okay, great. yeah, he's a saint. So let's talk about what you're doing now. You have now, as we mentioned, you went viral for breaking down the riffs and it kind of turned into this series and everything like that. And now you've started this like online class for it. So tell us what it exactly is and like what, how do you get involved in?
Yes. Okay. So basically it's my first digital product where it's a buy once, use at your own pace, like actually don't have to be in a time zone, mm-hmm. a fully produced product with 15 modules, do at your own pace. Like my methodology of like how I basically break down riffs, but like also nuanced pop tools that I add to how to approach a pop song. Whether it be, you know, I am a musical theater singer, I don't know how to do pop tools, or I am an advanced riffer and I want more tools to hear music a different way and add other things to my toolbox. And just to like add fun and ease to the world of pop singing, where I think there's like this big anomaly with riffing and it's like, it's not as hard as you make it. And mm-hmm. I've been working on it for the past year, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I have no life. And I'm, you know, launching it this month. I'm very excited. And they have unlimited access to it.
Yes. So it's not like a Zoom or anything like that, right?
No. Okay. It's a fully produced product that they learn from me at their own pace.
I love that.
Yes. And they can just practice tools they can use. Song reference guide for anything I reference in the course. There's all these goodies that they get at the end of it.
Brilliant.
It's just like a very cumulative, comprehensive thing that I've like basically my life's work into one project.
For sure. That's awesome. So yeah. Is it kind of just a course solely for riffing, or is it like everything?
So it's basically, it's definitely a course on pop technique and riffing.
Okay.
Whereas like all the stuff you see in my coaching is like placement and tone and belting. That's not this course. That's maybe in the future, like when I'm actually working with students. This is like your pop toolbox riffing technique, the mechanics of riffing and how to implement it and like pop tools. Mm-hmm. That's the gist of the course.
Yeah. Gotcha. So let's get into what you do as a vocal teacher. So like, how are you adjusting to this teaching online kind of pandemic thing?
Yeah, well, you know, before the pandemic, I had done, you know, a few Zoom coachings. I never preferred it unless I had met them in person. But like, honestly, I'm so used to it now.
Yeah.
That I'm almost like, can't imagine in-person coachings. Oh. Almost like, you know, I've made crazy breakthroughs with students this year.
Really?
That I have never met, which is so crazy to me. Like just like, for example, like this one girl who I like just have bonded with and like I have really felt like I've changed her voice with her and like discovering things that I was like, I cannot believe we've never met.
Yeah.
Like it's possible on Zoom.
Yeah.
I never thought it was. So that was crazy. And then the crazy thing about my business online that like was like thriving in September was when I did this belting for classical and legit singers and pop technique for legit singers back in September.
Wow.
I normally in New York would be like, okay, I'm doing a class and then like, I don't know, 10 singers. And then like, who wants to observe? It's like what, two teachers observe.
Uh-huh.
I had like 150 teachers apply to just watch
from
all over the world. It was so crazy.
That's incredible.
So that was like, they weren't even trying to sing. They were just like, I just want to watch the series. It was like a 3-week series. So that was a crazy.
I know. I feel like everyone like doesn't even know. Like, I feel like as we slowly open back up, everyone's kind of like, what do you mean? Like, I can just like continue doing what I'm doing.
I can
like,
sit in my sweatpants every day. I don't want to change that.
Right. Everyone's kind of just like,
every day. Can you even tell right now?
No, you can. You can. You look great. So do you think like, I don't know, especially for me, I feel like I tend to like fill my head with like myths and superstitions and everything like that about like my voice. Do you feel like there are like myths and stuff out there like about people's voices?
That's a good question. I mean, look, yes, of course there are. And yes, there are literally like passaggios and breaks.
Right.
But in my school of teaching, I don't believe in them in terms of mental blocks.
We love that.
You know what I mean? Like, yes, there are. But like when people come to me, they're like, okay, my break is in a day. I'm like, stop talking.
Uh-huh.
Stop. I basically just like a part of my whole thing is breaking down the mental block.
Yes.
So trademark. No,
trademark.
Excuse me. Hold on. So much of what I do is mental. And like, I have so many singers who have unbelievable ability and huge confidence problems.
Yeah.
And when I can like break that for them, that's huge.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, oh my God, I love the moments of, wait, you know, and honestly, as a teacher, I'm making up shit all the time. Like, oh wait, this visual helps me. Mm-hmm. What if we did this? And they're like, oh, I love like the light bulb faces and like finding new things all the time. And I'm finding things about my voice all the time.
Yeah.
Like I teach differently. I sing differently than I did.
Wow.
Even when I have to find a placement, I'm like, what am I doing? You know? Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, it's a real thing. I feel like your voice is a lot to do with your brain, like in your head and like the way that you like think. It's so,
and your body.
Yeah. It's crazy how it's literally connected to like your whole being, your voice.
Totally.
And like that one muscle is just like, it's incredible. But what you do, and like, literally if anyone watches their videos or her videos, and just like watches from like literally the time it starts to like literally like 2 or 3 minutes later, it's like, just hearing the difference in what you can find and how you can hear it and how you can help. It's amazing. It's brilliant.
Oh, yes. It's very, my favorite thing to do is like tweak and finesse. Like, I'm not a builder. I'm not going to take you from can't match pitch to Prodigy.
Right.
I love making small changes, but the small changes make a big difference, I believe.
Yeah. Okay. I want to talk to you about Dear Evan Hansen. Okay. Because I don't know. Like, do you kind of go to Dear Evan Hansen? So for those of you who don't know, Natalie is like in the Dear Evan Hansen album because she's like sings like You Will Be Found, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Waving.
And Waving. Okay. So, like, do you go to the show and you're like, wow, I'm seeing a show that, like, I'm in, but, like, not? Like, I don't know. Like, what's that like?
Well, the good news is not in pandemic, but you right. get that residual check when you're being played on tour yes. and on Broadway. So that is a sweet couch paycheck.
Amazing.
I think it is so cool. I think, honestly, I feel like we recorded all the parts of people. There's a voice that sounds like me that's like a spoken line and everyone's like, that's you on the album. And I'm like, it's not.
It's not. It's, right.
It's literally not. I didn't have a spoken line as far as I can remember.
Okay.
So yeah, we sang all the parts, I think. It's like 12 of us.
Can you like hear your voice? Like, can you like pick
I
it out?
I can on certain things.
Okay.
Certain parts, yes.
Wow.
But like barely.
I feel like
I can hear
so
my voice
cool.
on the Greatest Showman soundtrack.
Oh my God. Wait, let's talk about that. So which songs
on
were you
one
in?
Part. So I recorded on The Greatest Show, This Is Me, Come Alive, and From Now On.
Uh-huh.
The part you can hear me, I think it's like 320 something on Come Alive. It's like me and Lauren going, hey, yeah.
Oh my God. Of course.
Other Lauren. Than that, we sang every part. We tripled every part. I know, Lauren.
Wow, you tripled every part, so it's just like
just
you guys
sang every part and stacked. No, not us. I meant all the singers sang every part.
I was gonna say, like, just you two? Oh my God.
No. I mean, like, the reason I can't really hear myself on ensemble is because I really believe we stacked a lot of vocals.
Yeah.
You know, just everyone screaming.
Right, of course. and does that happen, like, often? Like, you know, from, like, movie musicals or, like, even on Broadway with, like, what Dear Evan Hansen did and everything like that. Like, does that stuff happen? Like,
mm-hmm. Like, basically, I think for something I did recently, we sang our specific parts and then we stacked them. So we definitely had separate parts. Sometimes all the females are going to sing all the parts.
Okay.
And all the males are going to, you know, it depends on what they want. The funny part about Dear Evan Hansen, Greatest Showman is the end of the Greatest Show opening number, uh-huh. which you've seen change so many times.
Yeah.
There were so many versions of the opening number. I mean, I have audios of like, this is your ticket to the greatest
yes!
show.
Oh my God.
Like,
that was
on my voice memos.
Yes.
I was obsessed with that.
Yes. That so one and so Oddities. Versions. Do you remember Oddities?
Oh my. Yes, of course.
I loved that song. But like, that was like the
so
original This Is Me. So I'm
changes.
Happy with This Is Me. But like.
Oh my. Yes. So it's been so interesting being a part of a process, seeing all the changes.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So were you in like the Dear Evan Hansen readings and stuff like that? Were you able to watch that change or like?
I was never there, but it's funny enough, I was doing this recording with Justin and Ben the other day for a different project
of course.
That I can't talk about. And they were reminiscing with me, but they were like, how many demos have we done together since college? I mean, since right, because we graduated separate colleges same year. Uh-huh. We were doing this thing in 2009 and we were reminiscing about how it went. We were singing it. And then I was like, what about that other thing? And they were like, that's what Evan Hansen became. And I was like,
no
what?
Way.
This demo I did for them in like 2008 or 9 was the story of a boy finding his true passion. And I was playing this part on this demo and it was Evan Hansen. And I had no idea.
Unbelievable.
So that's how long people work on shows. You know?
Yeah. That's crazy. Wait. So 2008, they probably opened what? 2015?
Probably.
Jeez, 7 years.
Probably been 5, yeah.
Unbelievable. That's so cool, though. Like, I feel like that's the coolest part of, like, what we do is just, like, watching, like, the progression of each project's,
totally.
You know, like, path and what they go on and what they do. It's just so cool. Speaking of, like, past and everything, I want to talk about the process of American Idol. Woof. Was that like intense?
Yeah. Here's the thing about like, I'm very big on like path and like, I wanted that more than anything.
Yes.
Like it was my dream.
Uh-huh.
And like the funny thing about like dreams changing, I watch all the shows. Like I'm obsessed.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fangirl. I watch them. I do reacts. I have a desire to coach on that show, not to be on that anymore.
Really?
It's just so interesting how it's just like, oh God, I can't believe that. And then I always think, what if I made it on the show? What if my video didn't go viral in 2006? What, you never know. And I was like crushed when that happened. I was like, my life is over. My life isn't over, you know? My experience was what it was. You know, I got put with the group with annoying stage parents, and I was known for the girl in the yellow shirt with the group with the parents that were intense.
Right.
And maybe I got a lot of screen time. Maybe if I was with a different group, I would have made it. Maybe if I chose a different song, I would have gotten put with a different. No idea.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is now Michael Orland, who's like, you know, a vocal coach on the show, he like loves my videos and he's like, oh my God. And I'm like, Michael, I was like cut and destroyed from that show. But I'm like, he's like, oh,
right.
Oh my God. Did we, you know, like,
wait,
I mean, I'm a different person. I've improved since then. Like my performance was like fine.
Right.
You know?
Oh my God. It was fantastic. It blew up.
I mean, I was 19. I'm so old.
Right. Right. No, you're not. No, you're not. You're not old. Trust me.
Oh my God. I was still older than you.
Stop it. Don't mean it. We don't need to talk about it. Yeah. Wait. So let me get this right. Is your like, are you saying that you would be interested in judging it or like being like a vocal coach on it?
Vocal coach.
Okay.
On it.
Okay. Oh my God. I could see both. I mean, I was just, I just wanted that clarity.
Yeah.
Okay. But like, I have to ask, golden ticket or like getting a call that you're like in a Broadway show?
Now I have no interest in being on those shows in terms of golden ticket. I think honestly now there's very few roles that I have like a real desire to play there. I think like, if a waitress situation came back, I really would love to do that.
Oh my God.
Or a new role that was like, that I felt really passionate about, that I felt like I could connect to, and not, you know, there's not a lot of roles I connect to. So I really would want to make sure it was right. And also my confidence level, like, I'm just like, I just have to, you know, it has to be the right fit.
Sure. So is it like more like, you're just kind of going to focus on like being a vocal teacher?
Right now, yes, I'm really focusing on that with other opportunities happening.
Okay.
You know, whatever happens, happens. I'm not, I would love to also be on an Amy Schumer show.
Oh my God,
like,
you
know, there's like a world where I could be on a sitcom. I just haven't had.
Natalie, we need to make this happen.
Hello?
Come on.
Come on. I just sort of like let it fly because it's hard to get in the room.
Yes.
You know what I
mean? Oh my God. Put it out there. Natalie Weiss for an Amy Schumer show.
There.
Yes. Come on.
Come on.
Manifest
dreams.
It. Come on.
Just give me a good deadpan role. I got you.
Right. Right. Oh my God. And then it turns into a series regular, you know?
Oh,
yes. Oh my God. That's iconic. I'm here for that. But okay. Yes. You may not have been able to like be a coach on American Idol, but you have been a coach for the Jimmy Awards, and we've had a couple Jimmy Award contestants on the show. And we've talked about kind of like that whole like process and week. I would love to hear what it's like from a coach's and judge perspective, I guess. Like how cool that is, that process.
I mean, that was my dream because I had watched the Jimmys and I'd also attended them, like attended the party, and just am so blown away by the talent. It's just like not to be believed.
Mm-hmm.
So to be around like such young talent is like, oh my God, I was not like that. It's like, I can't imagine like these like nuanced performances as a 17-year-old is just, they're crazy. So it was just such
insane.
A proud moment because they're already amazing, and just like fine tuning it and like watching all the people, and like I don't even know how they pick because they're like 90 amazing people, you know?
Yeah, it's insane. And like just to like see the talent that's come from the awards themselves, like it's just been incredible who they've been to like bring, like showcase really, and just like showcase their talent. But that's so cool. I feel like to be a part of that.
Oh, it definitely was. Oh my God. Yes.
Oh my God. I love it. Okay. So you mentioned you love all the TV. You love all the reality TV.
Well, not all of them, but like my specific ones. I'm not a housewife watcher.
No. We don't like the housewives. No. we like the Masked Singers. We do like the Masked Singers, I think.
We do.
And we like The Bachelor. We have to talk about
it. We like The Bachelor.
Yes. And we just need to talk about it, okay? Because The Bachelor has been kind of like crazy lately. So first of all, what is like, who is your favorite like bachelor or bachelorette? Like either one.
Well, definitely think Tayshia was like an unbelievable bachelorette, and like you know, I'm crushing on Ivan. Do you watch the
yes?
season?
Oh my God.
Okay, so like he plays tennis and I'm a tennis player and I was watching his videos and I was like, like what? And also their conversation about the Black Lives Matter date was mm-hmm. one of the most unbelievable, raw, unscripted date. Like it just was unbelievable. Television, I don't mean in a dramatic way. I just mean like real, you know?
Right.
So, you know, they broke up because of religious differences, which later on came out. But I mean, he was such an amazing contestant and she just had an amazing season.
Right. I really thought he was going to be like The Bachelor. I thought they were like going to announce it.
I know.
I was kind of bummed. But now they're doing like two bachelorettes in a row, right?
They're doing two bachelorettes and Michelle's going to be an amazing one and Katie's sweet.
Oh my God. So what are your thoughts on like the whole like Matt season? Like, was he like one of your favorites
or
no?
Look, people were like, this is the, I didn't mind it as much as other people because I'm always entertained by it.
Yeah.
I think people were like, I'm so over this. I'm so bored. I mean, they were like, I honestly am never bored. I was so bored by Fantasy Suites Week. I was like, you know, it's really tough. I think the whole Rachel Kirkconnell, it's really tough to navigate. I think they're maybe back together. Maybe she did some work. Maybe, I don't know. I think he needs to know what he wants also. Oops. And I think that conversation with his dad, have it happening on live TV after never talking about it. I was like,
right.
How is this happening? Like,
whew, mind blown.
Like, that is airing out some really deep stuff, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah, I know. It's, you know, it's so funny because like The Bachelor, like when you think about it, okay, I've been an outsider for too long. My mom has always watched it, right? And like literally always watched it, like from the first season. And like I kind of started getting into it in the Colton season, which is a whole nother story that we could talk about. And now I've kind of like gotten more and more into it, but I always was like, how do people watch this show? You know, it's just like a bunch of people like dating this one person. They're all like kind of cheating on this one person and like kissing this one person. It was so bizarre. But like when you start watching it, you kind of get like sucked in. And I don't know what it is about.
And did you watch Bachelor in Paradise?
I don't really, but my mom does. So I watch, like, I don't watch it religiously, like every episode, like I did of Matt's season. But.
Well, it hasn't been on in 2 years, and I think it's coming.
Yes, yes, I hear that.
The people are waiting.
I think too, like, the pandemic, like, they didn't want to, like, rush everything and, like, do – because usually it's, like, in between the Bachelorette and the Bachelor seasons and everything like that. So it was a lot. So I feel like that kind of had a role in it.
Totally.
And now that things are easing back up, I think they're able to get back into it. But it's been a crazy past couple of seasons for The Bachelor and this whole like franchise, because now with Colton coming out as gay and everything like that, like, good for him. I mean,
wow.
First of all, he was like the first Bachelor who like came on the show as a virgin. So like that was like what is happening. That was like the talk of like the town. And then he like got engaged and I think even married, and like they seemed madly in
engaged,
love.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Engaged. Mm-hmm. And I think they seemed like madly in love. And then he was like,
and I met them at Junior's Cheesecake.
Stop it. I met them
right
outside
the
of Harry Potter's theater. They went to go see Harry Potter like three years later after the season. And I was like, oh my
Seriously.
God. But like, yeah, it was just, I was in shock. And what The Bachelor always seems to be like appearing in the headlines, but it's a great show. And now like,
it's crazy.
Do you tend to like the Bachelors and like those kind of shows, or do you kind of prefer like the more singing shows to like watch?
I mean, both on my DVRs, like all the singing shows and This Is Us.
Right. Oh my
and
God.
And I love Shark Tank.
Uh-huh.
That's on reruns. And I love Shark Tank. If I have time to watch DVR. But yeah, then I watch like, I haven't binged in a while, but like, I have to watch The Handmaid's Tale. The Handmaid's Tale's back.
I don't know that one.
Hello?
What is that?
What? Eli?
The
Elizabeth Moss. Hello is the... Are you with us? On Hulu, it's like the biggest show ever.
Oh, really?
Hello? Yes. Elizabeth Moss.
No, I don't know that one. Honestly, I've got on Hulu like 9 times, and it was solely to watch A Teacher. Did you watch that one with Kate Mara?
I watched it.
Yes. No, that was like crazy.
It was solely to watch A Teacher. Yeah.
It was no, like, okay.
Actually, it was really good. I watched The Wilds too. Did you watch that on Amazon Prime?
I didn't. I've heard that I need to get into it too. I've heard it's a good one. I heard that one, and I heard of like The Hundreds coming back. Like, it's starting to get more popular.
What's that?
It was a show that was like popular on TV years ago. And then, like, now Amazon Prime or Hulu, one of them, like, brought it back, and now it's, like, getting popular again. I don't know. It's been...
Oh, wow.
It's okay. One of those, like, futuristic shows that, like, oh, there's, like, 100 people left in the world, and, like, they're just trying to survive, and they're doing, like, everything they can. It's kind of, like, have you heard of Snowpiercer?
Heard of it.
Yeah, it's that one with Daveed Diggs, because he oh my god, a king. Talk about an amazing show. That's so good. It's from what I've heard, I've been able to relate it to Snowpiercer. But it seems very interesting.
I just realized, I have to charge my phone because I'm going to get a phone call after this and it's totally dead. So can I just hold on one sec?
Hi. So, I mean, we're going to wrap it up here like any second now anyway. So it's all good. But I do want to say we've talked about like talking about how you like to watch all these TV shows and you like to post about it and everything like that. So how can people find you and kind of have these live reactions of you watching these TV shows?
Yes. On Instagram and Twitter, even though I don't really use Twitter, TikTok.
Amazing.
The Natalie Weiss.
Oh my God. TikTok, come on. You've definitely seen her on your For You page. And if you're not following her, you're insane. Oh, yeah.
The Natalie Weiss.
Natalie, I swear to God, I feel like you're like always on my For You page, just like belting your face off.
Oh my God. I'm sorry. Really?
Yes.
I'm not really a TikToker.
Really? I feel like it's something that.
Like, I don't understand how it works and I don't have patience for it, but I literally just like repurpose things.
Yeah.
I'm more of an Instagrammer.
I understand. I feel like TikTok's
but whatever
a lot.
Works, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just to continue to grow your audience, you know? But didn't you do like a driver's license like cover on TikTok?
I did driver's license cover off key and a self-coaching of it.
Oh my God, you guys, that's another thing I forgot to mention. She's so good that she like is good at singing badly, if that makes sense. She can make herself.
I've been singing badly since like 8th grade.
Oh my God, no, stop. You like actually like, I don't know how, because like I don't even, I honestly just don't even know how she can like make herself just be off and like make the when you hear it, your like ears like are like, what is happening, what am I listening to?
People go, is everything okay?
Right. Oh my God,
you sound different. I'm like,
it's on purpose. Yeah. Oh my God, it's so good. Those videos are like literally my favorite. And I can't believe I didn't mention it. But yeah, so the Natalie Weiss, go check her out on social media, all the things. And then check, look for. She'll be
my new course.
Yeah, Breaking Down the Riffs.
Yeah, the guide to Breaking Down the Riffs by Natalie Weiss.
Amazing, and
yes, full guide.
And if you're like following her on like her social media and everything, you'll be getting all those updates about like her course and all of the amazing things that she's up to and the videos of her like vocal lessons and everything that she like kind of drops in here and there. All the amazing things.
Yes. And then also NatalieWeissOfficial.com and NatalieWeissVoice.com. There's like products on that that are coming.
Oh my God. Wait. Products? You're like a brand.
Well, the product of the course is sold on NatalieWeissVoice.com because we had to get another domain for the course.
Oh my God. All of the things are happening. I am so excited. This is so exciting. Everyone who's listening to this, go check her out and go follow her if you're not already. And Natalie, thank you for joining us and coming on and giving us your time. It was great to catch
Thanks
up with
for
you.
Having
yeah,
me.
Of course. See ya. Take a bow, Natalie Weiss. Oh, I mean, I don't even know what to say. It's just, she's one of the few voices in this industry that I was literally blown away. I mean, there are so many people whose voices blow me away, but like, you know, you have those people who like you'll never forget like the first time they sing and just your reaction to it. It's literally, it was everything that you'd ever want. It was incredible. And she still has an amazing voice. And now she's shifted to, you know, really honing in on her voice and her singing ability, and has this career as a vocal teacher and now breaking down the riff. So if you're interested in anything that we talked about today, go check her out. She's incredible. Her crash course is going to be amazing, and it's out today. Reminder. So very exciting stuff happening. You have all that information of when it's coming out, how it's happening, where to go to now. To sign up for all of that. And just, Natalie, thank you for coming on and sharing your experiences. She has had quite the unique experience. I mean, just with her voice and her following, like, you know, to be in one Broadway show and then Emoji Land and Barely in Wicked, like, it was just so unique. And now what she's doing to focus on her voice, and now she's doing Broadway shows, but like from a distance, like she's the recorded tracks in Dear Evan Hansen, she's in Greatest Showman, the soundtrack and everything like that. Like, it's very interesting just to see how you could have a career in this industry. And we talk a lot about that on next week's episode as well. So I'm very excited for all that's to come. And Natalie, thank you for coming on. It's been a fabulous week. I never got my Carolee Carmello vocal impression, but it's fine. I'm not mad about it. Okay. It's fine. I'm handling it fine. I swear. Anyways, I digress. So what are we doing? What are we doing this week without Broadway? Let's talk about what we can do to kind of, you know, entertain ourselves while we don't have any shows to go see. Well, you're already doing it by listening to this episode, which is one of the things you can do, to get your Broadway fix in. But there's going to be some cool events happening this week, until our next episode. So on Sunday, May 30th, that's like Memorial Day Eve. Is that like a thing? Memorial Day Eve? I'm making it a thing. We're making Memorial Day a thing, y'all. Memorial Day is already a thing. We're making Memorial Day Eve a thing, y'all. That's right. On Memorial Day Eve, we're having a National Memorial Day concert that is a night of remembrance. And that's at 8 p.m. and it's airing on PBS. And it's going to be including some of our favorite performers like Sarah Bareilles. It's going to be having Brian D'Arcy James. It's going to be having Bailey Madison and so many more like actual like legends, like country legends, pop legends and all those. But those are some of like the Broadway names and kind of the musical theater names that were attached to it. And there, of course, there's plenty more, but those are some notable names that are going to be performing then. And there's one more fun event to be excited about. For my London listeners, that is. I'm so sorry to everyone else, but this is for my London listeners. In the UK, the show must go on, and they are quite literally making that happen. A bunch of shows are coming together, and they're going to be performing at the Palace Theatre in London starting Wednesday, June 2nd, which is next Wednesday, and it goes until Sunday. So literally, there's going to be a week of performances. There are 7 performances that they're going to do. There's going to be 2 on Sunday, 2 on Saturday, and then 1 from Wednesday through Friday. Those are all at 7, and 2 are the matinees on Saturday and Sunday. Very exciting. Shows like Come From Away, Dear Evan Hansen, the Tina Turner musical, Wicked, 6... All of these wonderful productions are coming together at the Palace Theatre to benefit Acting for Others and the Fleabag Support Fund. So go check that out if you're in London. Go check it out. Support those wonderful causes and organizations. And go see some live theater, y'all. Because live theater, I miss it. I can't wait to see it. I gotta wait till September. You can go check it out next week. What? That's insane. I'm so jealous, but it's fine. It's fine. I'm handling it well. Oh my God. Too many outbreaks this episode. Before I leave you all, I want to give you all some triple E for episode 53. Let's talk about it. So Natalie and I were talking. I know I talked about it a lot on here, but it's a day that I'll never forget, and it's a day that I'll never stop talking about. So as long as you all are listening, you're going to be hearing about it. So on We talked, literally, we stopped the episode and we were just like, can we just talk about that day? And we're going to talk about The Greatest Showman. And we're going to talk about each day for 3 years that we put on this presentation for producing companies. And it's literally, I mean, it's everything that you ever want to be a part of. Readings are some of the coolest things. Not to just say that, like, oh, I was a part of that, but you're also able to listen and learn to see how it grows. Natalie and I talked about the beginning, the first ever opening of The Greatest Showman. It wasn't that, ladies and gents, this is the moment you've waited for. It was never The Greatest Show, but it was, this is your ticket to The Greatest Show. And it was this fun, like, craziness. It was everything. And This Is Me wasn't in it. This Is Me didn't make it until like the one of the final versions of the show. They literally wrote a song and suddenly it was in the third presentation. We were like, whoa, that was incredible. That needs to be in the show. It was a bunch of other songs before that. And just to see, it's interesting, like, to see the songs that do make it and the songs that didn't. So, like, Tightrope, Million Dreams, and and Rewrite the Stars, I think, were the only songs that actually made it from, like, the original versions. Never Enough wasn't initially in it. It was a song sung by Betsy Wolf, and that wasn't initially in it. Tightrope was, From Now On was not originally in it. It was a different show, which is the ending that it is now. Come Alive was always in it. So Come Alive, Million Dreams, Tightrope, and Rewrite the Stars were the only four songs in the 11 song soundtrack that actually made it from the first, like, from the first reading that I did. There probably were, like, demos and everything before that, but from the first, like, reading that they actually presented it to a company, those were the only four songs that made it. So it's really cool to see, be a part of that, and just to, I don't know if any of you have seen it, but Jeremy Jordan has this viral video on YouTube of his 54 Below concert and his story of how, for the last presentation ever, he was casted to play Philip, which is the role that Zac Efron plays in the movie. But he had to due to some minor difficulties, Hugh Jackman actually had skin cancer that he had to get removed for the last presentation. And so they were like, oh, well, Jeremy's an incredible singer. Why doesn't Hugh say Barnum's line and then just sing for him? Because he can talk, but he can't. It's harder to sing and scream and all of that. So Jeremy Jordan, the true professional he is, had a day to learn all of Hugh Jackman's songs, and he delivered it beautifully. And then on the last song, this From Now On, he was told that, you know, like, he was literally singing it, and then Hugh was like, I think I can do it. And he's just begins to take over, and he's singing this song, and with skin cancer, he's prevailing through, and it's so emotional. Everybody's going crazy. Everyone's like, oh my god, this is our leader. We all got to step it up. Oh my god, we're jamming out. And literally, it was like literally one of the most fun days. And this is just minutes after Keala Settle sang This Is Me for the first time in front of a live audience. And it was like, everything, like, the room was insane. You can't imagine the environment the room was in. And literally everyone was in tears, on their feet, smiling. Like, it was like happy tears, but also sad tears, just because, like, Keala put us in our bag, and now Hugh is doing this incredible thing. And it was literally like a day I'll never forget. And I'll never forget, I had no clue what I was getting myself into. I saw that it's The Greatest Showman, and I saw that Benj Pazek and Justin Paul were writing the music, and that's why I was interested in it. So when I go for my first day, obviously we had done A Christmas Story together. And so I go for the first day and I'm like, Benj, Justin, great to see you. I have most of the song down, and I'm pretty prepared. So I can't wait to, like, sing it and hear how it goes and everything. And they're like, oh, great, great, great. Well, we're going to bring you in like 4 minutes. It's okay. We're on a little break right now. And I was like, oh, okay, great. Well, I thought I was going into a room to learn the song with them and sing it the way that they wanted to. But no, I was brought into a room with Hugh Jackman and Sutton Foster. And like, now I was not like the theater geek, I guess, that I guess I've grown into as I've begun to get more appreciation for theater. I was just like blown away. I was like, I know these two. Like, I know these people. Sutton Foster and Hugh Jackman, like, they're stars. Like, Hugh Jackman is a superhero, literally. Like, he's like a superhero. He plays Wolverine. But, like, he's a, like, a real-life superhero. Like, he's insane. Like, he's huge, muscular, like, everything. Like, oh, my God, I can't. Anyways, and then Sutton Foster is literally a queen, a goddess. Literally, I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they were like, oh, well, it was actually Bowen Yang's. And they were like, you could put Sutton Foster in the, like, Audra McDonald, Bette Midler kind of icons of Broadway. And I was like, wow, that's kind of true. Like, I never really thought of that. And but then I was like, well, if I knew who Sutton Foster was, then of course you could, because I didn't know many Broadway people. So if I knew you were pretty famous. And I was like blown away. And here I was singing this song for Benj Pazek, Justin Paul, Hugh Jackman, and Sutton Foster. And I'll never forget the day, because I walked into the room and my heart dropped and I didn't want to sing the song. And I was so freaking nervous. And I sing this song and all of a sudden they start singing along with me. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm singing a trio with Hugh Jackman and Sutton Foster. And it was just like mind blowing. And like, I walked out of the room and I was like, you'll never guess who I just sang with. And my dad was like, oh yeah, why? And I was like, I just sang with Hugh Jackman and Sutton Foster. He was like, oh, that's cool. I was like, Dad, this is a big deal. And like, ever since then, like, literally going to the studio, the rehearsal space, wherever it was, with that project, with those kind of people, was just a dream. Like, I literally look forward to it every day. I was doing double duty and I would have to get up even earlier than I usually would to go to do another gig and do another job. But it was so fulfilling, and it was so, the things I learned and just how nice everybody was. Hugh Jackman, literally a couple months later, I went to go see him in The River. And afterwards I was like, at the stage door, and he recognized me with all of these people just hanging out at the stage door to get his autograph and to meet him. And he recognizes me and says, oh, Eli, like, come here. Like, you should have told me that you were coming. Here, stand over here with the security guard. And afterwards, I'll come in and say hi. So I stand with the security guard. The security guard brings me into the theater again. And I'm like, oh my God, like, what is happening? What is life? And Hugh Jackman comes back in and is like, oh, did you like the show? Like, how was it and everything? And I was like, oh my God, it was amazing. Now I'm like a forever Hugh Jackman fan. And I actually have a poster of The River hanging in my room with it signed saying, for Eli, to my mini me, Hugh Jackman. And it was like, it was everything that I ever wanted in my life. It was like, wow. And that experience, The Greatest Showman, is an experience that I'll never forget. And if those rooms, I mean, I can't even describe it. It was just incredible. If you watch YouTube videos, you're instantly moved. But just imagine being in the room and how much more of an impact it had on you just being in the room for that. It was an experience I'll never forget. And I'm so grateful that I was able to have that experience. So that was my fangirling moment about Greatest Showman. I am not salty. A lot of people ask if I'm salty for like The Greatest Showman that I wasn't like in it. And I was just like, no, like, I was a part of it. The Greatest Showman, like, the lines that are in The Greatest Showman, the way that Million Dreams is written because, like, I created that. Like, and I was in that developmental project of just being like, this needs to be how it goes, and maybe here we can raise it, and maybe here we could go down, or maybe this key should be different. Like, I was a part of that entire process, and like the role of Young Barnum wouldn't be what it was if I wasn't a part of it. So like, in a way, I'm grateful, and I was still able to work with some of those people, obviously, like, not Zac Efron and like stuff like that, but like, it's okay. Like, I was able to work with amazing people in more of my field of Broadway, with like Betsy Wolf and Kiala Settle. And then we had Andrew Keenan Bolger playing Tom Thumb. And all, like, there was just a bunch of Broadway stars just in a room together collaborating to make this movie musical come to life. And it was just everything that you'd ever want. And I am not salty that wasn't a part of it. I understand it's the nature of the business. It's also the nature of men's bodies, of how quickly they change, and somehow you just can't control it. And it's not their fault for not giving me the role that I couldn't sing. So like, it's good. It's okay. I understand. And I'm just forever grateful to say that I was somehow a part of that production. And it was incredible. If you haven't, go check out Jeremy Jordan's YouTube video from his 54 Below concert. And Aaron Tveit was in it too. I think he has a YouTube video about his story as well. He was the original Jeremy Jordan, the original Zac Efron, all of that. And it was an incredible experience. And it's definitely one that is unforgettable, and one that everyone should check out, all of the videos that are out there on the internet. That's this week's Triple E segment, Eli's Entertainment Experience. And I literally could talk Greatest Showman for hours and hours, but I'm not going to do that to you all, because it's been a long episode, and it's been a long outro, and it's been a long segment, but it's over, and we're gonna see you next week, okay? We're gonna see you next week, and we're gonna have another amazing guest. And this guest is like no joke, and it's not like any of our other guests, and he has a lot of amazing messages, but he's not even a performer, and he's not even a stage manager or a casting director or director or anything like that. You'll never guess what he is. So I'm very excited to bring that episode to you all, and it's going to be a fun one, and I can't wait to see you all next week. So bye, everyone. Have a great week. Stay safe. Stay well. I'll see you all next week. Bye, everyone. For this episode's Curtain Call, I would like to recognize a few people who also deserve to take a bow. This podcast would not be possible without the help from Dori Berenstein, Brittany Bigelow, Katie Rosen, Alan Seals, and the team at the Broadway Podcast Network. Next in line to take a bow is Kessie Tokash, who edits the audio and all the visuals for this podcast. A special thanks to patrons Brian Thompson, Pat McNamara, the listeners at PCC, as well as all of the other patrons for their continued support. If you're interested in becoming a patron, go to patreon.com/TAB. And if you enjoyed this week's episode, don't forget to subscribe on the platform that you're currently listening to this on. Also, feel free to give us a follow on Instagram at Take A Bow Podcast. Take A Bow's logo is designed by Giselle Bustos, and the music is by Nikki Torsha and Cormac Collinon. Bye, everyone. Hope to see you next week.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.